Big time count. What B movie will be the ultimate champion? You might think they're crazy, might think they're diseases. But they watch all the shot to find the best of the beast. It's Stan, Jim, Jack, and Nick who watch till it's finished. But their love for these movies can be diminished. And maybe the film's plot has no rhyme or reason. But that's part of the charm, Owen Brad's of the season. The low budget film that it is most true. They find in the flick that's most boogaloo. Kung Fu, Electric Boogaloo. Boo boo, Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu, Electric Boogaloo. Boo boo, Electric Boogaloo.
Yacht Mala! Welcome back, my friends, to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This is season 10. Do you believe in magic? I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and I am so happy to be joining all of you here today to talk about Beastmaster 2, Through the Portal of Time. And I am joined, as usual, by my good friends, and I have James Cotta.
I am happy to be here, and I'm glad that we finally got the incredible Mark Singer onto one of our shows.
I know, it seems so hard to believe that it's been 10 seasons, and it took 10 seasons to get Mark Singer on.
Hardly seems likely.
All right, Jack Hall.
What's up, Pilgrims?
Pilgrims, okay.
Does ketchup go bad?
It
never seems to go bad. Is that magic? Because otherwise, I'd like to know what the hell I've been ingesting.
Well, I get it. You've been ingesting magic, then. Isn't that nice?
I'm pretty sure it's at least 4 years old, what was in my fridge.
Well, it has to be refrigerated, which makes me think that it does.
It has to be? Well, then.
Once it's opened.
Okay.
All
it was
right.
Maybe for half that time.
Ketchup Foo Electric Boogaloo. That's yeah. Right. Rocking it. And now, which condiment would you like to talk about, Nick Boxer?
Greetings and salutations. You know, I am always up for good mustard convo. A lot of people don't really understand the intricacies of this particular versatile condiment. Now, did you know that 80% of the world's mustard is grown in Alberta, Canada? A lot of people don't know this.
I have seen you literally eat a mustard sandwich, and I got the feeling you thought the bread was in the way.
I do view hot dogs as a mustard delivery system rather than a food unto itself.
Well, if you knew what was in it, there's no way you would call that a food unto itself. All right, let's get on to the damn movie.
That's right, Beastmaster 2, Through the Portal of Time, and now we have to hear Nick talk again about the synopsis for this magical movie.
Sure thing, but I have to clear up a misconception right off the bat with this movie. No time travel.
It's true.
Involved in this movie.
Yeah, there
the
goes
the title might throw you off. So we start, you know, just hanging out with Dar, who obviously has gotten in some trouble with the powers that be from the first movie. Supposedly, we didn't kill all this religion off as we were led to believe in the first movie. And we have this guy, Akhtar or whatever, you know.
Arklon.
Who has a magic wand for some reason that can do just about anything. It seems to make styrofoam rocks attack people. It blows shit up. You know, whatever you need, that wand can do. So he captures Dar, which Dar immediately escapes and runs away. The bad guy chases but runs into a witch. They decide to team up. The witch decides that, you know, she can really help this bad guy by opening a portal to another dimension, which just happens to be like 1989 LA, where she tells him, you know, the ultimate weapon is there, a nuclear bomb.
The neutron bomb.
Neutron
detonator, actually.
Neutron detonator. It's all nonsense anyway. The bad guy is immediately able to grasp what he can do with a neutron bomb. Without very little prodding, he decides he needs this, but he has to sort of, you know, test the portal out. And while they're trying to figure it out, by accident, a senator's daughter driving a Porsche in the middle of a car chase with the police accidentally just drives through the portal.
These things happen. You make it sound implausible.
Yes. The cops chasing her immediately crash and have to deal with Archlon and his witch and his many, many, many minions. But the girl keeps driving and nobody seems like, I mean, they're confused, but no one's terribly output by this chain of events. But she keeps driving until she runs out of gas. She runs out of gas and decides, you know, the smart move here would be just to walk through the desert. Where she, of course, you know, immediately runs upon Dar, who convinces her to turn around. And, you know, she doesn't feel a need to really tell him that, you know, the bad guys are over there. And I forgot to tell you, and this is a major plot point, Dar, while he was escaped and wandering through the wasteland, runs into some sort of plant beast that was his father's sister. For some reason, is a plant beast who tells him that he has a brother. That makes no sense, but we would never really learn that Archlon is actually his brother for quite some time. Or at all, if this, I don't know. This is a very confusing movie. So,
I'd like to, if I could just stop you right there when she drives her car off into the middle of the desert, and then she does the logical thing and walks around in the desert. My question is, what would your alternative have been?
Well, wouldn't it be like, I don't know. I think I'd stay with the car.
Why?
She does. I don't think she knows she's in a different land at this point.
Okay, I'll give you that.
That she does come. She does arbitrarily just keep going the same direction, though. Like, it's not like, yeah, she's like head towards the mountains. Mountains usually have water. She just keeps going in a straight line.
Dar this time around has a tiger instead of a panther for some reason. Actually, the real reason is, like, disgusting, and we won't probably get into that too much. We might talk about that later.
No, actually, because I have no clue, now you need to talk about it now. Like,
oh, there was a tiger in the first film that they painted black, but painting a tiger black is not good for the health of the tiger, supposedly.
No kidding.
And it killed it, and they got in all sorts of trouble with the powers that be. So they were no longer allowed to paint tigers black, which actually
I like that you said supposedly. Painting an animal turns out, you know, if you believe big government.
Well, it depends. Is it spray paint? Is it shoe polish? What are we talking here?
I am just saying I have no firsthand knowledge of painting animals.
So you didn't go to school for that.
And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
You just haven't lived, man.
So, Dar, and I think her name was Jane, just continue back the other direction until they run upon the bad guys, You know, and there's a little confrontation there. But the upshot is Dar, for some reason, decides to just run with all his animals through the port. No, the bad guy goes first. Bad guy goes through the portal to 1989 Los Angeles. And Dar and his animals chase him, and Jane follows through. And, so the bad guy immediately delays Dar with fire because, you know, barbarians are scared of fire. And they go off to get the nuclear bomb. Dar is delayed by the most inept cops I've ever seen. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, at some point in time, did this become... from telling us what the movie is about to giving the entire movie. When did that change?
I don't know. I was scripting them and they didn't like that either. So now I'm just going.
Okay.
So the bad guys go after the nuclear bomb. Dar decides, you know, he has to stop this guy. He now has learned as his brother. By the way, his tattoo on his hand from the first movie has switched hands, I noticed. Which is kind of entertaining. The bad guys grab the nuclear bomb. They head back to the portal. Dar chases them all over the city. The bad guys get back to the portal, but the cops are there. So the bad guy decides to go to the zoo. I have no idea why he goes to the zoo. Dar chases him to the zoo, and there's a big fight at the zoo with all the animals sitting around watching the spectacle. Did I miss anything?
No, let's go to scoring.
who was the key grip?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Sorry, it was a very intricate plot. I'm sorry.
There the is a lot of...
That's all right. I'm amused that halfway through that you said, I don't really understand what was going on, and then still had a solid summary after. Where do we want to start?
Yeah,
I've got a big picture question. Okay, so the neutron detonator is your MacGuffin. That's the centerpiece that the villain is after, and the heroes are trying to stop him from getting it. Classic MacGuffin. The sorceress, explains that the neutron detonator can blow up a continent, which starts several questions in my head. One, can someone from Dar's world conceptualize what a continent is?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, wait a second. This is the same character that you're talking about. This. What was her name? The Sultana or whatever? Or is that the other movie? Anyways, she opens it up there.
Liriana.
Yeah, Liriana. They open it up. They open it up when she meets the Archelon for the first time. Her first words to him are, "Hey, chill out. Now you're worried." of the things that I'm thinking that seem unlikely, I think the idea that they know what a continent is not nearly as much as the fact that they would use that expression.
This extends out though. This is part of an overall theme of questioning that I have.
And so I think you're going next to where I immediately went. If so, without going to setting take off the bomb, how does anyone understand the threat of the bomb?
That's where I'm going.
Yeah.
so geopolitically in our world, there has been a atomic bomb go off. Thus, people know what an atomic bomb does. And you say, I've got a bomb. And they're like, I know what that is. But if you're in the other world and you've got something that can destroy a continent, how do you explain that in a way that makes people scared?
Well, and they can't even explain a car. I mean, there's people at the end who are just looking at the car like, ooh, this is something awesome that we should crawl all over.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you could point at the car and say, this thing can destroy a continent. Yeah. I mean, if you're that persuasive, you don't actually need to get the bomb at all.
But he immediately goes to, like, the balance of terror and all that, explaining, you know, I'll be the most powerful person on this earth and everyone will worship me just immediately.
Yeah, it's almost like it was scripted that way. Hmm. You know, the interesting thing is that I guess as I was watching this movie, I felt like throughout, like, okay, this is their story. It's a Beastmaster. There's some things that don't make a lot of sense, but you know, it felt very consistent in its own way. But then, as Nick was describing it, I was just like, wow, this really fucking Boogaloo sounding.
The thing about this movie for me is I just looked at it as a pure comedy. Like, to me, it's just that's all it is. It's not a comedy adventure. It's not an action. It's just comedy. Nothing else.
Well, Mark Singer plays it like that. That's for sure.
Well, yeah. And as does Wings Hauser as Arklon.
Oh,
I mean,
boy.
You know, very rarely have I had a bad guy that was more charming and likable than Arklon. He was so fantastically, like, how could you dislike that guy?
They really did a lot with the alien in another world kind of stuff, where, like, he doesn't understand how a store works and how people trade goods.
Your there's a food lot of that, is so colorful.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff with that. Like, I mean, both characters have the, you know, now that they're in our world, like, Beastmaster has to figure out what a TV is, and Arklon has to figure out what a store is.
At one point, Beastmaster says something about, like, we're in the land of the lunatics. So, you
know. Which is true.
Yeah, pretty much true, yeah.
I can't hold that against him. And that's the thing, right? The great thing about a movie like this is that it does allow you to make those like, social commentary moments actually make sense.
Now, I haven't seen this movie since I was a kid, and I always remembered, like, it was a cost-cutting measure, you know, to film it in L.A.
Definitely.
But it takes an entire hour to get to in L.A.
No, like 10 minutes, dude. Maybe 50 tops.
But there's still, like, the thing is that for the most part in the movie, other than a couple of moments, that where the gate is where 70% of the movie takes place when they're in the Beastmaster's land. Like,
the
I was
correct answer was a half hour, by the way. Sorry, Stan, I interrupted you.
So we cut the middle.
What was that, Stan?
I was just saying so much of it took place in the same location in Beastmaster's world.
Well, that was one busy alley.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't get is the police follow her through the portal. Then they come back through the portal without the car. And at no point in time do the police or anybody put this area on lockdown and, like, investigate it. Like, you'd think the government would be there, and you'd have all these scientists, everybody trying to figure it out.
You're going to block off an alley for a couple crazy cops and a naked guy?
Probably.
Wasn't there a line where at one point it's Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince is plays the cop, and Uncle Phil at some point goes says something about put out an APB and all freaks in loincloths, something like that. I can't remember exactly.
Because there'll be a few of them.
I preferred the other police detective with the bow tie. I thought he was a little bit weird.
Was that Bendowski?
Yep, I think so.
So what is the deal with those cops? Like, they seem to work a strange beat because they're called in. There's a mostly naked guy in an alley. These are the cops that you call. Like, they waited for these guys to arrive too. These detectives. Like, it's not like it's just some guy and a tiger. So they get called in when there's a tiger. And then they're also the cops that come to the department store when Arklon has caused a fuss. So, like, what is their specialty?
I just assumed there were no other detectives in the city. Because, L.A. isn't that big of a place. Why would you need more than two?
How many cops can there be? Yeah, how many cops can there be?
Yeah.
They have a lot of time to work this case, too. Like, they, for what's essentially, like, a guy has an illegal animal, they've got a lot of time to shake him down, question him.
Well, yeah, they need to get to the bottom of it.
There was a lot of actual potential comedy in the him being questioned that I thought that they missed in the police. There you could have had more freaks that were way freakier than him and made him seem normal. I don't think they took proper advantage of that, because, I mean, it's Los Angeles and it's a police station.
Well, you know, Cast a Deadly Spell did a great job in even just like a 30-second walk through the police station than this did.
Yeah, no, definitely. Anyone weirder than Dar already escaped that police station, because Dar seemed to walk out of there without any problems whatsoever. I mean, true, he did have to jump through two windows, but they all seem to be on the ground floor, so.
Does someone know Beastmaster as a character more, like, from the other movies? Has anyone, seen the rest of the films or the TV show or anything?
I've seen it all. The only thing I've watched repeatedly, though, is the first movie. I do love Beastmaster 1.
Yeah, I saw the original Beastmaster when I was like a kid, so I couldn't tell you anything about it. I didn't see anything else. I know these things were played, Beastmaster and Beastmaster 2, and the reason this series happened is because they were massive hits on one of the Turner broadcast networks. So,
I'm trying to his origin is explained at one point. It sounds super gross, so I was looking for a better.
Born of a beast of burden or something like that.
I never put that together. Womb and put it into a beast of burden. It just sounded mega gross. I was hoping for a more complete explanation.
I never put that. You're basically saying there was some.
See, that's what I'm. You can't even make a whole sentence and a complete word out of that sound.
He was cut from his mother's belly, the queen. That's all that was happening there.
Well, what I don't understand is the very first. Don't they say he's leading an army against another army? That's the opening scrawl. Because we never scroll that we see at the beginning, we never get any of that. Was that part of? I don't remember the first Beastmaster well enough to know that.
There was no army. They supposedly he got army together after to fight these guys, but at the end of the first movie, all these guys were dead. Just for this movie, they decided there was more of them that they needed an army to fight, so they raised an army that never appeared.
Yeah, it says the rebel forces are marshaling in the east is the phrase. So, but he never Dar under the leadership of Dar, who has not yet arrived in the east.
No, exactly.
And then immediately we're introduced to Dar, who says he's heading east for vaguely defined reasons.
Now, how many years? I think it was. Was it not? Is that about right, Nick? You says you seem to be the Beastmaster the most. It's about 9 years in between these movies.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure that
it could have been a week. I have no idea. Maybe that's the portal through time.
82 to 91. So in our years, 9.
So here's a couple of stats for it, though. On TNT, it was the second most popular movie behind Gone with the Wind. Wow. And it was on HBO so often that Dennis Miller had a joke in his act that says HBO stood for, "Hey, Beastmaster's on."
Nice.
That's awesome.
That's a good joke.
That's a good joke. I like it.
That's a good joke. Give him some credit on that one, definitely.
But really,
it's. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I. You know, when are we going to talk about Kodo and Podo, the real stars of the movie?
As a major plot point in the first one, Kodo dies.
Yeah, I think wasn't there though some babies afterwards, and one of these could be a baby replacement, Kodo.
I have no idea how long in movie time between these two films takes place, or how fast ferrets grow.
Well, luckily, an answer to that is magic. You got magic everywhere.
That's right. It's a land of magic that. You know, because otherwise, where else could our clan get that magic sticky, green laser beam thing?
And let's also talk about Carrie Wuerer. Is that how you pronounce her name? Was it Wuerer?
I think you just keep doing ers until you feel like you're
Carrie Wuerer. Yeah, no, in her non-root role here. How annoying was her character? Like, in a scale of 1 to 10, somewhere in the thousands, right?
Also, she's cast as love interest. She's casted the love interest is like 20 years between the two of them.
So don't go there. That's the thing is, right? It's like at the end, there's like this tension when he has to leave and she's like, and it's like they never kiss. They sort of like there's a like a she gives him a good peck, but there's no. So it's like a love interest, but like they don't want to go there because I do think in real life that Mark Singer is like 18 years older than her or something.
Yeah, wow. Something like that.
No, I mean, but she was a wild child because, you know, she was just raped by some guys in Tijuana, according to this movie. There's
well, that a
throwaway
was a joke.
Line about, yeah.
Yeah, it's a joke she made. Yeah. Yeah, they remind me of, yeah, those some debaucheries going on. Remind me of some guys I met in Tijuana last night. And I was like, what?
I like that it was last night. Like, that's,
yeah, no, that's.
Well, she, they proved she was out. She was out, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's 19 years between them. Wow.
Super annoying, wow. Partially because they were trying to write this, like, it's just throwing in terms, like, it's 1991, and they're using terms like rad, having her say things like that, like they're just, they have no idea how kids speak, they're just trying their best, and I found her, the character, very annoying. She was a little more likable towards the end, but certainly at the beginning when she's introduced in the car chase and she almost dies and she screams and then goes, cool. Like, I was like, come on now.
But she was running from the cops to make her sister's wedding.
What?
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, that's true. On the that phone, is true. That's true.
Yep, absolutely.
And her father on the phone is an impeding for the entire movie.
Yeah. Huh. Yep, that's what she said she's doing. It's not mentioned again, but it's...
Nope. It was a huge plot point for 10 seconds.
Yeah, and I was thinking where they're like, oh, well, she'll have her bridesmaid dress, and then at some point the bridesmaid dress will be what she wears in the other world. None of that happens. it's never important again.
Yeah, actually, she even grabs the bridesmaid's dress out of the back of the Porsche when she goes for the walk.
Yes.
I like the guitar that she grabbed out.
She doesn't have it later, though, does she?
Like, no, disappears right after that.
She grabs it just to ditch it? Is that the reason why?
Well, that's why both me and Jim thought it was going to be a plot point that was never brought up again.
Yeah, maybe it was. I mean, this is a movie that Wynorski wrote and was supposed to direct, and then the producer who produced the first one decided to do some rewrites and to direct it, and that became a major lawsuit. In fact, Wynorski said he made more money from this when they went to the syndication. it was still tied up in the courts years later, like mid 90s. So in order to put it on television for the syndication, they had to buy him out, and he apparently he was not giving them a deal. He took them to the cleaners. So
how many credited creators are on this movie? It's like 7 writers or something.
It's a lot.
There's a screenplay by Wynorski, Robertson, Sylvia Talbot, that's the director per writer, Ken Hauser, Doug Miles. So there's 5, and a story by Wynorski and Robertson.
Didn't Don Costarelli from who directed the first one get a credit in there as a creator as well?
No, he did not. The author of the novel that the first one was based on did get a credit. Did not get a credit in the first one, though, because when she saw the film, she did not want to be associated with it. But they convinced her to go on this.
That's awesome. Magical. All right, I think we've probably beaten this painted tiger enough.
Yeah, I think we really have.
All right. In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate each film in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called schlock appeal, and we start with Stan.
Well, this is definitely a, you know, it's got its sword and sorcery elements. You toss that into the early 1990s, which, you know, feels just like the 1980s. And yeah, it's one of those total dichotomy moments where you're completely out of place. So those always go over well when it comes to schlock, I feel. The way that it's played, there's some performances that are just plain old crazy. There's a lot of stuff that's plain old crazy, especially as I go back and think about it more. So for that, I'm going to give it a 7.
I'm going a little higher. I mean, you look at the VHS box art alone, the painted cover. That is what I want in a schlocky movie. You got a half-naked guy with a sword, with a girl down by his loincloth region, and a Porsche crashing through a portal. What isn't schlock about that? 9.
Except for the fact that I don't see a girl down by his crotch area.
Okay, she's short.
She's standing behind him.
He may be looking at a different image. There's a bunch of different posters.
Oh yeah, but I can see the one where she's standing beside him. But I can see the Porsche crashing through the portal for sure. But
I thought he was just looking at the poster for the next movie.
There's no Porsche in that one.
No, which is too bad.
I'm going a little lower than you, Stan. I don't actually think this is very schlocky. Like, it's cheesy. Those aren't the same things. If it was cheese appeal, it'd probably go a little higher. Cheesiness and schlockiness aren't necessarily the same thing. I think it's a really fun movie. It drags a bit, though. That's the big thing.
It's long. It's
long. It drags some. So if they had cut out a few minutes and it didn't drag as much, I'd go a little higher. But I'll give it a 6.
I think it's called Beastmaster 2 Through the Portal of Time. Any mix of those two of those words is going to be pretty boogaloo, pretty schlocky. I was heavily influenced by the taglines of these movies when it comes to schlock. An awesome hero, an invincible villain, time travel to a distant world. It's going to be a wild weekend. I dig it. I'm going with an 8 on this. More heart than budget, and we have a $6 million reported budget according to IMDb.
Well, when you consider that. For $6 million, basically, they got a desert and an alleyway in L.A. So, I mean, that's probably all right. There's some recognized amusement park.
There's a department store. Now we covered it all.
Yeah.
I think there's twice as many locations as you thought there were. In that there were four.
But this is one of those ones where, I mean, again, being a sequel automatically knocks it down a little bit, I think, and there are some moments where you feel like they're not really taking this seriously. So I think I'm just gonna go with a 4.
Really? I disagree with you. I watched this entire movie looking at Mark Singer's face, just trying to see if he rolls his eyes at any point at anything he says. Nope. Not a eye roll. He is in character. He is embodying Dar. He is Dar. He's playing it for all it's worth. I don't know if anyone behind the scenes was taking it quite as seriously, but I'm willing to go up to a 7 on this one.
Oh, see, I thought personally that they said to Mark Singer, "Can you do some acting for this?" And he looked at them and said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll look stunned for 90 minutes of the hour and 45 minutes runtime. That's what you'll get." And they went, "We'll take it." Because he just, like, that's it. It's funny because it's got a big enough budget to pull off the car chase scene with multiple camera angles and different things. And, you know, some special effects that are actually fairly good for the small budget. You know, the portal itself looks really cool and stuff like that. And on the other hand, they clearly don't have enough money to like, for instance, you look at the outfit that Arklon's wearing, right? And it's clear they clearly didn't have enough money to make that look good and things like that. So it's kind of right in the middle for me. So I'll give it a 5.
I'm going to say it's right in the middle for me, so I'm going to give it a 7. I don't know whether this is a defense or not of Mark Singer. I know Mark Singer is acting very well because I was a huge fan of V from the 80s, and there's like 18 or 40 hours of that. And this looks this looks indistinguishable from the acting he does there. So I don't know whether I don't know which way that swings your vote, but that is the way Mark Singer acts.
No, we mentioned this is the first movie. Is this also the first movie with Robert Zadar? And he doesn't play
Robert Zadar.
Okay, because he doesn't play a very big role, but he isn't. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, he was in the Amarok. Good point.
Yeah, I was happy to. That was one thing that excited me as soon as I started watching this is like I hadn't looked at the cast or anything. So Carrie Werrer I like and I saw Robert Zadar, who I thought would have a bigger part.
Yeah, for sure.
I figured you have a big name like Robert Zadar, and you want to put him on screen. You want him to shine, but he downplays this. It's more of a cameo for a star of his caliber.
Was he the salesman?
What was the name of the character?
He's one of the henchmen. Yeah, he's one of the Archon's henchmen. He doesn't follow them into our world. He's only in the desert.
Okay.
All right. What the fuck moments?
Well, what the fuck felt like when the second that they got to LA, that felt so what the fuck, especially the way it was set up. But there was some things that I kind of noted. Like there was a point where we went overnight. When Jackie was going for a walk in the desert. And then we come back to, we see the camp where the portal is and the bad guys are. And then the next day we come back there and they're basically just standing around the portal. There is no camp. They've been standing around the portal for like an entire night. I'm thinking like, do you guys sleep or do you just like stand around basically? I like the fact that the portal opens. Like, when you touch the portal, it opens on, like, a grand overall shot of L.A. And then, once you need to go someplace, it takes you to the alley.
No. you missed the point there. You can only go through it during the full moon. When it's just showing all of
LA. I thought you could LA. Only go back.
That's during the day.
I thought you could only go back through the full moon. Right. But then again, I also thought that you could only go back if you had the witch to help take you back. So
well, that's because she had the knowledge that you had to go back.
She,
That's why.
She knew how to get back, and that was just like a trick, basically.
Look, by the way, let's give a little shout out to Sarah Douglas, who most well known for her role in Superman 2 as one of what was her the character she played, General Zod's female, one of the three Kryptonians.
Ursa,
yeah, a little shout out to her.
Great stuff.
Wonderful. Yeah, she's wonderful in this. Yeah. Stan, I feel like I'm going to start my what the fuck moments if Stan doesn't actually continue talking.
Okay. And I mean, I'll wrap it up quick here. When they were in the clothing store, the discount clothing store, which I guess what it seemed like, when he went into the change room, and I do not know why, it looked like they built it out so that the change rooms actually kind of resembled like a nuclear reactor in its way. Like they were really built out with like almost like steel and elements, but just. A simple curtain. It was like they took a set from someplace else and just repurposed it for it to act as a change room for this movie.
They wouldn't ever do that.
No, of course not. That's not. I don't do that in movies. There's some odd stuff, but I mean it's pretty linear overall. I'll give it a six.
Was it Tanya Roberts that was in the first one?
Yeah.
Where did she? Where? What happened to her character?
I assume she was leading the army.
Oh, okay, makes sense.
Yeah, she stayed home for this one.
Four Dar. Yeah, she got his proxy vote.
Yeah. Stan, screw you. There's a whole lot more WTF in this movie than this. This movie has a guy spitting tarantulas, and it's just thrown away.
Yep.
Just thrown away. He jumps in a car, is cursed by a witch, spits out a tarantula. Nobody knows.
I don't know why she didn't curse more people. If she had the power to curse people, then, you know,
she had to kiss them, I'm guessing.
Not to mention that end battle at the zoo, the soundtrack alone, where they accidentally cue the soundtrack for the daytime show, which has a lion and a hedgehog meeting.
Oh, the Tasmanian hedgehog,
right. Yes. Natural enemies.
Yes, you're right. That's fair.
And this soundtrack plays the entire battle, which an elephant and a monkey just walk into the arena and watch these two guys have a sword fight in the middle of a zoo, which I have no idea why they decided to go to a zoo.
Well, and given that he's Beastmaster and he doesn't actually control any of the beasts, you know?
Well, no. The Beastmaster is just the name people gave him. He's friends of the beast. He doesn't refer to himself as a Beastmaster. That's others doing. He is simply Dar. King of Acadia. I guess I have to give it a score. For those two things alone, I'd give it an 8.
I mean, why start now?
Yeah. Just now getting the concept of the show. I
pass. No score for me. This one, it's too good to score. I can't do it.
You mentioned the battle in the zoo at the end. What caused the ground to, like, open up and fire to shoot out of the bottom? I never
That was the wand.
But the wand at that point wasn't really working, and he didn't use it. He had to throw it
away. No. That was just for the impotence joke in the last scene.
Oh, yeah, there was that. Yeah. When the
wand never ceased working. It's just not his wand isn't the most dependable of a...
Yeah. It fizzles out, and I've had a couple guys do that to me, is what she says. Yeah. Like I say, it's basically a comedy. Why is it that when the character, the Carrie character, gets out into the middle of the desert and finally Beastmaster wakes her up, she's sitting there, they're in the middle of the desert. They've walked away. You know, she's walked away. And it's a desert. You can see in every direction for 100 miles. And she looks at him and goes, is there a gas station nearby, or at least a 7-Eleven? I'm like, woman, you can see that there's nothing close to you.
No, I mean, shit, I'd be a little confused too. I mean, sure, you can see, but I mean, you just crash the portal and you're thinking I'm in downtown LA. She's just a little confused. Who wouldn't be?
Downtown LA at that point. Just no way. I think with most of them have been pointed out, I'll give it a 6.
Six it is. I think the final battle being in a zoo, and then that opening scene where they're going to kill, like, the kind of the introduction of Dar is that he's been captured and they're going to kill him. But they're like just outside. So he calls animals for help. Like I'm watching this thinking, like, is this like, it's like trying to drown Aquaman. Like you're just putting him in a place with a whole bunch of his friends. And then you're shocked that he's able to escape. So lucky
it was a zoo where the last. Oh man. Actually, you know what? You reminded me of something here, but when they're doing the car chase at the beginning, do you realize that they drive past a theater and on the marquee is Beastmaster 2, the Portal of Time?
Yeah.
I love that.
That's amazing. That is fantastic for sure.
I got a couple more I want to specifically mention. There's at one point. Okay, so Archlon is trying to get the neutron detonator. He is he has disguised himself as an army general, and Beastmaster is watching TV. He's watching the limited attention span network. Which is showing the news, and Archlon in the background of the reporter shot, Archlon in the military uniform is getting into a cab, and the cab's parked in front of a missile. And, you know, Carrie Wurr says she knows where that is. Her and Beastmaster go off, and the missile is outside the military base, a like walking distance. So he has, and you see our client get out of the cab too, which means he took a cab from the gates to the front of the building.
That's amazing. You know what? You just reminded me of another one. Keep going. Come back to me.
You do yours because mine's late in the movie.
Mine is too, because you just reminded me, because there's all this car stuff now. There's a point where they're driving and they need to drive to the zoo. And when they're in a Mercedes, I think. And when they show up, it's clearly a different model car. I can't remember, like a.
It changed from a Mercedes to a BMW.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Amazing. And you know what? And then there's also the part then where they had to drive from near the alley to the zoo, and then later on, after everything's done, Beastmaster walks off and heads back to the alley. About 30 seconds later, the girl, Carrie Ware character, figures it out. And she still somehow driving the car manages to show up back all that distance later than Beastmaster, who's already in the alley. You know what? I'm pumping this up. I'm going to 7.
All right.
Like, the more we think about this.
After the movie is closed, as the credits are about to roll, we see Beastmaster running toward camera, the sun setting behind him. And
yeah.
At first I'm like, oh, this is dramatic. Beastmaster's run toward the camera. We're about to see the credits roll. And then I see the tiger walks up beside him, and you realize that that Mark Singer is just running. He's jogging in place in front of a flat background because the cat just walks away, yes. Diagonally, like in front and behind him.
That was spectacular. You know what? That was when it became obvious that he wasn't actually running. That was, I thought, that was.
And once it's obvious, they don't cut it off. Like that's a good minute, half a screen time there.
Because the tiger's runs up beside them, and it just kind of stops for a moment, and then starts running again itself. I'm like, maybe because tigers don't know how to run in place. Maybe you guys had not thought this out very well.
The tiger, he'll be able to just jog too. I don't know what shot you're going here for, but we'll do it anyway. I'm going up to an 8 on this. All right. Memorable moments.
The thing that excited me the most, actually, about this was that the music was done by Bill Ray. And I had just watched a movie called Private School, and I thought that it was awesome. And Bill Ray did the music for that. And I realized that now this is a guy who does great 80s, early 90s soundtracks for movies, because all the music throughout this was that typical of the era. So I will remember the fact that Bill Ray did the soundtrack. I'll remember the fact that this was my first experience with Beastmaster. I don't know how much further that will get me, and I'll certainly remember the fact that that they went through a portal to L.A. It's not a huge memorable moments thing for me, so I'm only going to go with a 5.
I'm a huge Beastmaster fan. If there was merchandise, I'd buy it. I haven't found too much of it, but anyway.
And you haven't bought it yet.
I am part of Beastmaster's crew. I love it. However, I have to say, Beastmaster 2: Portal Through Time is no Beastmaster. This film is kind of forgettable. I'm only going to give it a 4.
Wow, I'm surprised by that. You know what? I mean, I'm giving it a 6. For me, the most memorable thing is just, like I say, it's a comedy, and I just thought there was a lot of funny lines. There's a part there where the character, what's her name, Ursula from Ursa, whatever her name is from, what was her name again?
Liriana.
Liriana. Yeah. Liriana. There's a part there where people keep on talking about her bosoms, and she is always remarking about how somebody's like, I mean, cleave your bosom out, and she goes, people always want to cleave my bosoms out. I think they cleave it's fine by themselves, thanks.
And that's a good line.
Yeah. There was that loincloth line for the police officer. There's a part where Archlon, like I say, he's just so likable. He's sitting there going, bring me Beastmaster. And his henchman is walking away going, yes, master. I want him. Yes, master. Now. Yes, master. Like, it was just hilarious. Like, laughing so hard. Yeah, like I just, I, so I mean, for me, the comedy sticks out. I'll remember a lot of that. It's very funny.
Yeah, the dialogue is great in this film. When Archlon and Beastmaster have a big confrontation, and Archlon's very disappointed that now that he's found out they're brothers, it's like, we could have worked together. He's, the things I could have taught you. Things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. There was also the part where he goes something along the lines of if you mess with Archlon, you'll be killed by Archlon. It's just like, awesome. It's just, oh, and then there's that line, remember when they get to the house, something about the Cary Warriors character says, anybody know where the remote control is? And that was the TV show that she became famous on MTV, was Remote Control. Oh. So that was a shout out to that. So
I think I will remember this flick, and I will also, I want now to see more Beastmaster films. I want to see more Sarah Douglas films. I guess I could have mentioned it during the what the fucks, that Sarah Douglas, she just vanishes from this movie.
Yeah.
She helps out, she gets betrayed by Archlon yet again, and then she goes and helps Beastmaster, and then disappears from the story with like a full half hour to go, 25 minutes, half hour to go in the film, and she has just stopped being a character.
You just assume that she never left Los Angeles and just...
Yeah, I guess she's just there. Yeah, I call her Cleavage Sorceress.
Well, she did say that she was staying.
She liked the clothes there. 7 for me. Crazy concept is the final category.
Well, I mean, obviously, Beastmaster creating a sequel to something doesn't make it usually that crazy. And I think certainly taking it and bringing it into... you know, at that time, modern day LA really is, we've seen that kind of thing before. So I don't feel like this is very crazy. I'm just going to go with, there's some crazy parts, but I don't think the concept is crazy. 3.
You know, I think it's much crazier than that. Just cause you know, you got a successful property. Let's change it entirely by bringing it to modern day LA. I think that is insane. That is a stupid thing to do. And I'm sure Beastmaster 3 and the TV series tried really hard to forget that direction. It would have been so much easier to go, you know, straight ahead. You got a Conan-esque property. Make a Conan-esque film. So I'm going to give it a 7 on this.
You know, Mark Singer, I don't think was in the TV series. I think he was in the sequel to this one, though, right?
He was Dar's father, Dar, okay. In the TV series, okay. As a recurring character.
Brilliant.
Okay, and they've spent a lot of time on that one. Yeah, I know. I'm pretty sure that I don't know if I'd call it a successful property. It's just sort of a cult film, you know, for Beastmaster. But I'm pretty sure that at some point in time, it was years later, they looked at their property and said, "What can we make a sequel to?" And somebody goes, "I don't know." And somebody else just walks in and goes, "Hey, I just saw Masters of the Universe. You should see it. They put them in LA." And they went, "We could do that with Beastmaster." Like it's you've seen this a million times. It's easy to do. It's not a very inventive concept in the least. 3.
I'll split the difference, call it a 5. I think adding this much humor to it is a bit of mixing it up. All right, so that brings us to the end of our balloting. Each season we have 6 secret modifiers. This film does get 2 of them. It gets a +1 for having magical creatures. It has, we never even mentioned the Swamp Thing type monster that he hangs out with early on in the film.
His aunt.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole head, the family tree in this movie. Yeah, you've got your birth mom and then you got your beast of burden. I don't know what you get them for Christmas. It does get a -1 for being one of the longest films we've ever done at 107 minutes. and which gives it a very respectable 61 out of 100 as its final score, putting it between Planet of the Vampires and Dracula versus Frankenstein.
All right. Well.
You know, I'm kind of disappointed. I understand. But while watching this, I was thinking, you know, you add a can of tomato juice in this, and we got a perfect score.
I think if Cary Warriors had more to do, She's not a love interest, but she doesn't have any more to do than like the precocious kid that happened. That's in so many other movies like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like in her mid 20s if she's playing like 16.
Yeah. So,
it's an odd one because to me, like I found it odd, but it's no more odd than a lot of the movies that we see. So it's very, you know, it's just a standard boogaloo. You know, when you talk about Ninja 3 the Domination, it's just like it brings some stuff to the boogaloo. You know, so it's like, oh wow, you're just pumping the crazy in. This just, you know, it has a steady stream of interesting, sometimes crazy, but it's not like full bore crazy.
I agree. It was fun. It was a fun movie to watch, but it's not a boogaloo classic. It's not Frankenhooker.
Well, so the next question then is, will Deathstalker 2 prove to be a boogaloo classic? That's full Wynorski. So it's always good to get Jim Wynorski on the show because I know he offers a lot of potential boogaloo. His boogaloo potential is through the roof, I think. But so that's next episode. But we got to do some business.
All right. You can find us on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And we are sponsored by We Talk Podcasts. And they have a website that's .com. And they have a Facebook and they have a Twitter. And please subscribe to the show in whatever your favorite podcast app.
Yeah.
Subscribe and review. And review.
Review. Excellent. Excellent choice. Yeah. Your words. You use your words.
Yeah,
but
use them better than we do on the show.
Yeah, please. you can't do worse. But and also next episode we are officially entering the octagon where we're going to spit out a whole bunch of random words and hope that they make some level of sense. So I look forward to
every other show.
Yeah, yeah. In this case, though, I look forward to giving out a lot of season ideas and hearing what other people have to say about that. So that should be good fun. All right, Deathstalker 2 coming up next. So I think we should just wrap this one up. So for Jim and for Jack and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
In a dark and distant age, a lone warrior with mystical powers.
Master of the beast.
And the creatures he commands. Rue, his strength. Kodo and Podo, his feet. And She-Rock, his eyes. They will challenge the forces of a brutal tyrant.
Did you actually believe that you and your flock of peasants could overthrow my kingdom?
But the battle for the fate of their world,
with threat of such a weapon, I could rule unopposed,
will lead them to another.
The ultimate power awaits you, my lord.
The dimensional portal, the doorway to your ultimate triumph.
To the most barbaric land that time has ever known.
This is Los Angeles, most awesome place in the universe.
Yo, Darth Vader, what is it, some kind of movie set?
You gotta get yourself a fresh thread. Rock and roll, baby. Whoa.
How come a clean-cut jungle boy like you is hanging out with a creep like this?
This geek is really trying to get the bomb.
The world is mine.
You must pass me first.
Singer returns in Beastmaster 2 through the portal of time.